Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is show 120. We are recording on Thursday, March 5th. We're talking about the races of Saturday, March 7th. A little bit of a change up in the plans this week. We have our Tampa Bay Downs takeover. We're still going to be doing that tomorrow, but not everybody could get their schedules on the same page. So we're going to do a show right now. This is our normal late week show. We are going to talk about those races at Tampa. We're also going to talk about racing at Santa Anita. And because he couldn't join us tomorrow due to his travel schedule, he's here with us today. He's the people's champion. Jonathan Kinchin, what's up?
Yeah, double R's. He's lucky. I have something for him. This is a blessing in disguise for him. I can tell you that much.
Oh my goodness gracious! Double R because of his resemblance to the cartoon character Richie Rich. Presumably, Rich Averill will be joining. Matt Carruthers will be joining on the takeover. It's a great card at Tampa on Saturday. There's an all stakes pick five. You're going to want to be involved. And we'll have much more on that later in the show and tomorrow. I should have mentioned, I'm very far from the Brooklyn bunker right now. I red-eyed out of New York last night. I was anticipating an empty plane just because of all the coronavirus fears and stuff. Was surprised to see the plane 80 to 85% full. And of course, I sat down next to in my little seat and there was a couple in the row with me. I'd entertain these fantasies about it being empty and being to like lie down and sleep for the red eye. As it turns out, the woman in this couple of proper boomers, JK, they might even been older than boomers, had some sort of seat malfunction. I don't know if she couldn't press the seat back or something, and this was like a big problem. And it gave me a little bit of hope, but I was like, I think there's too many people. They're not going to be able to move them. The stewardess is trying to give them, seats in business class, but they're not together. And the couple's like, no, we want to stay together. I don't know what she did. She pulled a rabbit out of a hat. She got the olds up and out, and I was able to lie down and sleep for more than half the flight. It was a beautiful thing. You ever have anything like that happen to you?
They call that the poor man's first class seat. You don't fly enough. It's when the seat in the middle is open and you get to act like you got first class. You get two tray tables. It's great for handicapping. Put the laptop over there, the iPad over there. It's great. Yeah, it's great.
The poor man's first class. That's fantastic. Well, much better than just getting the one seat was the two and being able to lie down. I then went to my work home for the day. I'm calling it the Surrey Studio, very far from the Brooklyn bunker. And indeed, she might not be happy about this, but Muggs the Handicapping Labrador has a replacement here today because I am joined by Marmalade the Form Studying Spaniel. So we've got a lot going on. Marmalade has been really well behaved. Marmalade is a puppy, so there have been some outbursts, but Marmalade seems to intuitively know that when the green light of the Roadcaster board is on to go in his crate and sleep. And then when I stop talking, he comes over here and jumps in my lap, uses me as a human scratching post, knocks at the door, does puppy things. But Marmalade being very good right now, but if there is an unexpected interruption, I'm going to go ahead and blame him. And for you, JK, I'm going to blame not being able to have you on with Double R and Matt Carruthers. I was looking forward to having that three-headed handicapping monster, but we'll make it happen today. Tell the folks what you're up to this weekend.
Yeah, I'm heading out to California. We'll be at Santa Anita in the studio for the Fox show. I believe the times are 5:30 to 7 is the show on Saturday. I was told the first 15 minutes of the show, you'll get the Tampa Bay Derby and the Gotham, I believe, in the first 15 minutes. So
loaded.
Action-packed hour and a half, and should be fun. Looking forward to it.
I'm over here to be on Sky Sports Racing. We do have a significant part of our audience, actually. I was looking the other day at the numbers, and it's a couple of points worth of our audience are in the UK, so they'll be able to watch if they want Sky Sports Racing. Not sure who the presenter is going to be. I'm on with Saturday night. I should have checked that. I also may go back on there on Sunday. I have an opportunity. I just have to see how that affects my travel plans. Heading up to Cheltenham next week, that's going to be a lot of fun, but we're going to keep as many shows rolling as possible. We'll do a production meeting not on the show to talk about next week's schedule, but I'm very excited to get through the rest of this week's programming. The Stronic 5 show is up. If you're listening to this right away, you might still be able to listen to that before those bets, before those races go off. And then Matt Vagvolgi back for the fourth week in a row on the Naira show, because I told him he's not allowed to leave our airwaves until we don't give out the pick five. It's mostly been his good work. I had a couple of good presses work out for me last week, but that's not too bad, JK. You got to be getting a little bit of handicapping envy with the success Matt Vagvolgi's been having over on the Naira show.
No, never. I'm always rooting for. There's only like one or two horse players in this world I don't root for. Actually, I guess the proper way to say it, there's three horse players in this world I don't root for.
I might be able to add one or two to that list, but yeah, that's the. I'm tempted to go on a tangent about their. It's maybe three. Maybe say it this way: three horse players and their assorted associates. Is that? Am I hinting broadly enough there? Is that okay? Can we say
you
that
got
on
a great
the show?
Beard. You got a great beard, Pete.
You know, I did. I just mostly chopped it off for this upcoming TV appearance. It's a little bit more in line with what Susan calls the fashion beard. It's still too long for her. But anyway, let's talk about some racing, and we'll kick it off. We'll do Tampa later because we, you know, that deserves a lot of focus, but we are doing an entire show on Tampa that we'll publish at some point on Friday. So I think we should go west, and then we'll move it back to the east. And this is my chance, too, to do my initial discussing of these Santa Anita races. The stakes action kicks off on Saturday at Santa Anita with the Grade 2 San Carlos. I didn't write down the race number. It's early. I think it's race number 4. I'll dig for that unless you have it in front of you and can bail me out.
4 o'clock. It starts at 1 o'clock local, so it's race 4.
So 4 and 4, if you're on the East Coast, we've got a field of 6 going 7 furlongs. And JK, a horse that you have liked for a long, long time is back, and it's Roadster. I want to hear your thoughts about him. But my gut here was that we might be able to beat Roadster with the likes of St. Joe Bay. What are your thoughts on this year's San Carlos?
Yeah, you know, Roadster's one of those horses kind of always giving you that glimpse of him going to be, I'm going to be a special horse. Never really seemed to materialize. He ran well in some of the Derby preps last year, and then he just never really turned into that horse. Now I think the 7 furlongs is probably better for him. His native Diver and his San Pasqual obviously weren't very good, but if you look at his Malibu and his Damascus, they both were pretty good. So I think that the 7 furlongs is going to be best for him. But now he's facing older horses and some pretty darn good ones. You mentioned St. Joe Bay, Flagstaff. My eyes kind of went to McHale. If you look on XBTV, you can see some of the works with McHale. McHale was working with Roadster, Mucho Gusto, McKenzie. Those are 3 quality animals. And so I thought McHale might be one that was a little bit interesting, drawn to the outside. That's going to be my top pick. But I respect this is a tough, tough race. I respect St. Joe Bay and Flagstaff. But I'm going to take the outside draw. And the guy with the silver hair.
What? No surprise there. One thing about Roadster that's just interesting as I looked back through it, that second to Omaha Beach, as good as Omaha Beach looked that day and the promise that he showed, and we all thought he was going to go and, you know, run off the screen of the Pegasus and all this stuff, it doesn't feel, this form doesn't feel as good as it felt in the aftermath of that. But I mean, if Omaha Beach, which of course we'll never know, was as good as some of us thought he might have been, you know, maybe that second is good enough to get it done here. But I'm with you in your general lean, and for me, the top one. I like your McHale thought. St. Joe Bay for me, and maybe I'd save with a little McHale over St. Joe Bay. I think that's how we'll leave it there. You have another thought on this one?
Do you know who McHale's a half to?
Who is McHale a half to?
Orchidia's Biz.
Oh, that's funny. Orchidia, of course, the doyen of the Eddie Logan suite out there at Santa Anita. I wonder if she'll be rooting on pedigree alone. Look forward to the chance to hopefully see her and the rest of the crew out there before the meet is over at Santa Anita. What are you going to do? Are you going to post up in Logan tomorrow? Have you made your travel plans?
I talked to my buddy Lafitte Pinkai the third. And we were debating whether we were going to patio margarita tomorrow or if we were going to go to the track. And so I think we might try to do both. Maybe patio margarita and then the late double. Maybe that's what we'll try to do.
I wonder, why do you have to choose when you have those two good options? Where would be your margarita patio? Give us a little lifestyle tip here.
I've got no clue. I mean, I'd have to defer to our Arcadians on some recommendations. I'm sure they know some places.
Oh, there's so much.
I guess I could have a margarita. I guess I could have a margarita to Logan, where Arcadia does make good margaritas, but we'll figure it out.
All right, let's talk about race number 5, one of the traditional undercard. It is still undercard, but it's almost like a co-feature because it comes up so often as an interesting grade one. It's the Kilrow Mile. We've attracted a field of 10, including the multiple grade one winner, Got Stormy. Looked a little flat last time, but boy, it looks to me like she just might have found the right field to add another grade one to that resume. She's just got a great blend of class, speed, tactical ability, and just enough finish. I don't want to single here in picks, though, JK. I want to try to find something clever. I'm not quite there yet, so the only one I wrote down in my notes to definitely make sure to talk about here was Got Stormy. But how do you see this one?
To me, this is a racy single or toss. You single
or
saying that
single
she
toss
needs
or pass.
yeah, single toss or pass, exactly. But you know, you look at her last race and you say, well, maybe she was short. Obviously, there's a lot of reasons why she could have been short. Why that they didn't bring her back to run as a 5-year-old to win the race at Tampa. And no offense, that's not why they brought her back. They brought her back to win grade ones and to add to her legacy and to make her an extremely, extremely valuable broodmare. And so I'm going with the fact that they just were taking it easy on her, letting her race herself into shape rather than cranking her up for that race.
Okay.
And then they put her on the plane out west. And if she runs any of her races from last year,
she wins.
She wins.
Yeah. Even the not best ones, they're still going to beat this group. Yeah, that's a great
point. If she runs the race she ran last time she ran on this turf course, she wins by 5.
Right.
So I think Got Stormy's going to win. That's who I would single. And here's part of the reason why I went in that direction is because the other horse that I liked the most was River Boyne. And River Boyne was won last time at 4-1 with an absolutely perfect trip. And I remember because I used him in a mandatory at the NHC, and this was like late, late in the day. It was right before those bombs started coming, and I needed this 4-1 shot. And he got a perfect trip. And just because I watched that, now I know it's probably not exactly what you want to bet back. You know,
last time he
got the best of it.
Yeah, last time. That feels right. That feels right. You're convincing me. I'm going to just single Got Stormy and hope for the best. I don't have a workout report, but just looking at the times of the recent works, they do look sharper. I think you're probably right. Just use that as a de facto workout, and maybe you get a little bit more. I mean, it's obviously going to be very bet, but maybe you get a little bit better of a price than you would have with the not even hitting the board at Tampa, staring folks in the face. I think you make a compelling case to go ahead, and it's an opportunity to plug our shirt for both of us, Chalk Eating Weasel.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
OldSmokeClothing.com. Use that promo code MONEY for free shipping. I've been hand selling a bunch of these things.
I know. I don't even have one, Pete. I mean,
I tell you this? I had them, and I had them to bring to NHC, and every trip I forget something. This time on this trip, and one of the things I'm doing is running a half marathon, I forgot my running shorts. Smart. Of course, easily replaceable. Much harder to replace was when I went to the NHC and forgot to bring all the In the Money Media t-shirts that we've done with Old Smoke Clothing.
You're a legend, Pete. Got Stormy, if you want to see her, I looked on XBTV, her two works back. She was, you can watch that work. She went 45-3.
Wow.
Going 4 furlongs on the turf.
Did she look good doing it? I mean, I would assume.
She's looking good doing it because I'm actually still looking at her doing it.
That's great. I mean, I know it's not exactly.
She's in company. Yeah. So check it out. If you're curious. If you have any idea how they're supposed to be moving, take a look at that work and see if it helps you with any clues on what she's going to do this time around.
We have clarity there for me now, at least a token single in the early pick five or something. Let's talk about race number seven. Sometimes we skip over the non-graded stakes, but I thought the China Doll was really interesting. This is a super interesting division going a mile on the turf for these three-year-old fillies. And there were a few I wanted to talk about. One of the ones on my list is Stella Star. Very interesting off the Group 3 win at Leopardstown. I'll just highlight that as a track that I think is often a really good pointer for horses who are going to run here. It is a left-handed oval, and the form often translates. So Stella Star is one of the three I have notes on here. But before I run through my list, who's your top pick in here? What's going to be your approach to this race from a wagering perspective?
Yeah, no, I'm actually was curious to hear your take on Stella Star and just from, you know, being having some European form. And my eyes always go to Joel on the West Coast when he's in these turf races. He's been banging heads with the big boys on the East Coast. And I think when he comes out here, he's got a big edge in some of these turf races. That one made sense to me. And then I can never say this horse's name.
Procavoke.
There you go. You knew where I was going. You look at the time form U.S. and you see that. My favorite thing to see when I look at a turf race, when I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to go, those closing into blue fractions, which she was doing last time. And that's always a kind of a, not always a bet back, but it's definitely an angle that I like to look at. And so that's where my eyes went there with that one. And I thought she was going to present a lot of value.
Crocovoke I like a lot as well. It was almost like you were reading from my notes there. I had exactly what you had said written down. And what did you make of Warren Showtime? That's another I had on my radar. Has Crocovoke on the form book from long ago. Crocovoke, again, part of the reason I like is the projecting improvement for the added maturity, but it seemed like if I was going to use Crocovoke, I should probably at least consider Warren Showtime somewhere on tickets.
Yeah, no, I wasn't totally against it. A lot of that California cowbred form kind of threw me off a bit. The last win was against statebreds, and so I thought, you know, the waters might be a little bit deeper here. But I wouldn't talk anyone off. It makes a little bit of sense.
More of a B-type horse for me. I do like Stella Star and Crocovoke the best. Any other thoughts on the China Doll, JK, or should we move it along to the San Felipe?
San Felipe it is.
All right. Will the Silver Wig be in evidence here? And which of the Baffert runners do you prefer between the two?
You know, this is one of those weird moments where I just want Thousand Words to run second or third, get in the Derby, and then I think the horse is guaranteed to hit the board in the Derby. So I don't
strong
know.
Strong words, this is guaranteed to hit the board. I can use that in the teaser tweet. PTF learns about poor man's first class, and JK guarantees a horse will hit the board. It's going to be the most listened to podcast of all time.
Yeah, I think Thousand Words is going to hit the board in the Derby.
You said you guaranteed.
Okay, guarantee. I'll stick to it. Look, it was actually funny. I was talking to a friend who's involved with Authentic, and we were just kind of talking about what I thought of his last race. And it's one of those races that's really hard to judge. His entire form is hard to judge as a lightly raced horse and expect what he's going to do. Here's the problem, right? His first start was at 5.5, where, you know, he was supposed to win and he did. So you don't really learn a lot there. He's a nice, good horse. We didn't waste a lot of money. You know what I mean? And then he comes back and he runs the Sham. He gets loose. They don't really go that fast. He's green all over the place. His number wasn't like daunting, but it was still respectable enough. So you don't know if like, was the race just not that good? Was he not pushed? Is there more? I think there's more. I think that he's going to continue to mature, become less green, and Authentic is who I think is going to win this one. But Thousand Words could absolutely get the job done. I'm just hoping that Thousand Words runs second or third here so that I can get a better price on him come the first Saturday of May.
I do not see this as a two-horse race. Do you?
I kind of do. I'm not a honor AP guy. Fort McHenry is probably going to be 3-1 in here because he's a half the California Chrome. Once they figure that out out in California, the Chromies will get to betting on him. And then the only one I thought was interesting really was Wrecking Crew. You know, he hasn't run as a three-year-old yet. This will be his first start, and there's obviously an opportunity for him to jump up. He had some pretty big races last year, and so I thought he was interesting as a horse that could probably pop up at a big price. But I thought it was one of the two Baffert horses to win. I'm not convinced on Storm the Court and the form of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
I let you talk for 5 minutes, and you almost didn't even mention the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner. I share your concerns about that form. We haven't seen it go forward. I think I'm going to... it's all price-depending here. In a world in which Storm the Court is semi-ignored, I could see giving him out as my pick on TV for this race because I feel like he's another who will really benefit from having had that run at what I'm guessing was an inadequately short 7 furlongs, as opposed to a horse like Authentic coming off a longer break. I feel like Storm the Court is also just going to get potentially an excellent setup here because I'm imagining Honor AP is going to go. We've got Baffert's to play team tactics. I might give Storm the Court one more try. I share your skepticism, and I would need to be getting compensated. If for some reason he's a co-favorite and the world flocks to him, I don't know what I'll do. I don't trust Authentic off the antics in the last race. The recent work tab looks good. If he runs well here, I'm going to start taking Authentic very seriously. Authentic is not some horse that I'm like against. I tend to agree that 1,000 words is a little bit more grindy. I just feel like somebody's going to get to the wire first. I wanted to like Honor AP more. I remember very early in the year when Naomi Tucker interviewed Mike Smith. He was so excited about his chances. I like the fact that John Sheriffs doesn't necessarily train horses for speed. When one shows speed like this, that's an indicator of natural talent, and he's in the right hands to have this horse settle and excel. But I hate the missing the work, and the recent work tab doesn't do a whole lot to inspire. I think I'm going to let him beat me. And he's another I could see taking a lot of money. How do you think they're going to bet this race?
Oh, I think they'll bet the two Baffert horses. And like I said, I think Fort McHenry will take a little bit of money just because, you know, the connections and he's a Tappet, he's a half a California Chrome. I just think he'll take a little, not a lot, but he'll take, you know, he'll be bet more than he should be. Now, Honor AP is another one that's like a, you know, he's kind of a famous type, right? I mean, I think a lot of people, I've heard.
When Mike Smith starts talking about his Derby horse in January, people notice these things. And that's what that's the case with this one. So he's another who could just take all kinds of money. I don't have a morning line on this, and I don't envy having to make one.
I don't envy being Flavian Pratt's agent who had to call Peter Urton and tell him that he's taking off the Breeders' Cup Juvenile champion.
Not an easy one. There are some prices in the UK on this race, interestingly. You've got Authentic roughly 3-2, 1,000 words roughly 5-2, Honor AP 5, Storm the Court 6, longer the rest 50 on your potential wise guy horse Fort McHenry, JK. Hearing those prices, does that tilt you any more of a direction, or would you still stick with Authentic?
Yeah, I think I'd still stick with Authentic.
And at 6-1, I would bet Storm the Court. I think that'd be worth a shot. And at you can't really, it's not a large enough field to get the each way top three. But honestly, I'd almost think about each way for Storm the Court's chance. I like him to run second, but I guess it's tough. You could easily just see the Bafferts run 1-2. It's an interesting race. I'll be perfectly honest, it's a race I'm more interested to watch than to bet. But I am excited to check it out on Saturday night. If you're in the UK, stay up late with me, and we'll have some fun betting Santa Anita. Let's talk about the featured race of the day at Santa Anita. Let's see. This is the first time I'm realizing, I guess I get to work till midnight on Saturday. It's the Big Cap, and there's a horse in here who we've talked about before who I just absolutely have to bet. I believe, isn't this the horse, JK, that I made the comment about the bad trip, that the only trip I've seen as bad is when Susan took me to West Virginia early on our relationship and I realized we were in separate rooms and it was a dry facility with Midcourt?
I remember that, but I didn't remember what horse
it was. I think it might have been Midcourt's trip two back. I think he is in a position to potentially turn the tables on Giftbox. I'm not exactly anti-Giftbox. I just think that Midcourt is going to offer better a better wagering opportunity. I feel like in multis, I might use those two, pressing Midcourt a bit. Midcourt, I think, is going to be the top pick, unless you have something wild to convince me otherwise.
No, I don't have a problem with that one at all. I was kind of interested in Hoffberg still.
Interesting.
He didn't run very good in the mineshaft, but that was his first start off of a break. It feels like that was kind of the goal, was to get him here. I think the mile and a quarter is exactly what he needs and wants.
Yeah.
I think he's just like, it feels, I don't know if this is the right thing, but I'm going to say it out loud and then I'll regret it if I want. He feels a little Vino Rosso-ish.
Okay.
Like that's, Vino showed up out on the West Coast and snagged one of these mile and a quarter grade ones and then ended up being the best older horse, right, for the year. We're winning the Classic. So we'll see. If Hoffberg runs that race, that comeback race he had at Saratoga in July, if he kind of finds that Hoffberg shows up, he can win this race.
You make some good points, and this is one for the international listeners that's going to probably be a lot more appealing internationally. I could see him getting a little bit of a wise guy look. Looking right now, you've got Giftbox is a pretty heavy favorite. Midcourt 4-1. Hoffberg 12-1. I mean, at 12-1, I start to take notice. Looking at these numbers, I'd probably play both Hoffberg and Midcourt, and then maybe play Exactas with Giftbox over both of them.
I don't know if it's a typo or not, but the turf work last time is a little bit interesting to me. I don't really understand why Billy Mott tried to do that, but I'm also not in the business of questioning Hall of Famers.
Fair enough. And who knows? Yeah, he might just have – he probably, knowing him, he's got his reasons. Hoffberg, interesting at a big number. I'd be curious to see what the USA betting public does with him. Any other thoughts about the Santa Anita card or the Santa Anita handicap, or should we move it east? Because this is your one and only chance to give us your thoughts on this loaded Tampa Bay card on Saturday.
East it is.
East it is. And it starts off this all stakes pick five with race number 7. And we've got the Columbia going 1 mile for 3-year-olds on the turf. JK, where did you end up in here?
Arnold Delacour. Oh, you bet the horse?
I don't have a problem with liking Arnaud Delacour, and he does have a strong hand here with a couple of runners, including presumptive favorite Chapalu. Is it as simple as that?
I mean, look, I think that if he runs his race that he ran up at Woodbine with that figure and then the turf race at Keeneland, those figures win this race. But I thought Commence was kind of had that look of the type that was progressive, gets his big rider in Daniel Centeno, but obviously Javier shows up on the other one. So, look, I these are the two that I like the most, and if I had to pick one of them, I would pick Chapalu, but I think Commence makes a lot of sense too, and is a type of horse I would use as an A horse in this situation.
Yeah, Commence is going to be a multiple of the price of Chapalu. I think on the morning line, they have it at 3-1 and 12-1. What did you think about the presumptive second choice in here, JK, the 8, Mr. Kringle?
I thought he made sense. I wasn't crazy about the Dania Beach. It was kind of closing into a pace that I don't think was the fastest pace in the world, but was just kind of in that good position, sitting not too wide, but sitting right there stalking, had an opportunity to run by and didn't do so. So makes sense, could win. I'm actually more interested in the horse to the inside, me and Mr. C, coming in off of a little bit of a break. He's got that turf sprint number back at Aqueduct that if he can, he's 56-1 that day. It was first time Lasix. There's a lot of reasons probably why he ran well. But if he can somehow handle the stretch out now and find a little bit of an improvement, he could probably get the job done at a nice big price. He's more of a B type for me or a contest type of horse, but the two Delacours are going to be my top choice, with Chapalu being my favorite one.
All right. I'm going to do a little bit more work on this Tampa card. I'll give some final picks when we have Double R and Matt Carruthers on tomorrow. But I think you it sounds like you're all around this one to get this pick five started off on the good foot. The second leg of this All Stakes pick five is the Grade 3 Challenger Stakes, 4 and up, going 1 1/16 on the dirt. And the predicted favorite, I saw a cheeky tweet the other day. I wish I could give credit to who it was. Hopefully it's a listener who can give me a hard time for the presumptive favorite in this race. They said something to the effect of, has there ever been a horse with a more appropriate name than King for a Day, JK?
No, I think he's got a right to be the favorite. He seems to be working good. I watched a couple of his works on XVTV, so you can check those out as well. He seems to be working good. You know, it's Todd, it's Johnny, it's a horse with tactical speed. He was in good position to make some noise in the Haskell. It had that really weird trip that everyone was wondering if Louis Saez was enjoying that left-handed turn a little bit too much. So I think he's probably the winner of this race. I will say this: if you bet Admiralty Pier in the NHC, I'm gonna need you to bet him back here today, big fella.
You're not a fan of Admiralty Pier going back to back? Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. It's a really kind of an interesting move with it, having the greatest stakes win on the turf and then switching back to the dirt. So a versatile type that deserves some credit for that. That's for sure.
King for a Day, I am remembering that trip. I've never seen, and I actually asked him this when I interviewed him at one point in Saratoga for a private event we did, like jockey karaoke night. And I said to him, I've never seen you so angry. Actually, it wasn't on mic because I wouldn't have put him on the spot like this, but I said, I've never seen you so angry after a race. He was not too pleased by those aforementioned tactics. King for a Day, absolutely a contender in here, but one that I do wonder if the big name and the notch on his belt of having beaten Maximum Security back last season, if it'll mean he's just bet too much. Where are you with Trophy Chaser, JK, and Paco for President maybe being able to be super aggressive and try to steal this race?
Yeah, I mean, I just couldn't really warm to him. He ran well last time, almost like it was too good. I thought that he had a shot in here, but I like the fact that King for a Day was drawn outside. Tampa, the rail hasn't been the most friendly place to be, and it just felt like he was going to end up kind of stuck down in there. Johnny was going to kind of put him down in there. And nothing against Paco, but Johnny versus Paco, I'll take Johnny in that battle.
Fair enough. One other at the low end of the odds spectrum I'm curious to get your thoughts on is Noble Drama, who I think did have a bit of a setup last time, and I do not think we'll have one this time, so I was leaning against, but just curious to see if you thought I was missing anything or if this is maybe a shorty we can try to keep out of the tickets.
Yeah, no, I'm against here. If I'm going to give another horse a call here, it'd be Big Dollar Bill, a horse that our boy Pipe, big fan of Big Dollar Bill. We got into an argument one time in the kitchen about how Big Dollar Bill was going to win, and he did. And then Big Dollar Bill escaped me at the NHC. I thought for sure he was going to be entirely too short on NHC day, and he ended up going off at almost 4-1, and I missed him. But Big Dollar Bill, I think, is interesting. I hate the rail draw, but I like the horse.
Let's talk about the Hillsborough. We've got a Grade 2 for 4 and up, going 1 1/8 on the turf. Fillies and mares, 12 of them head to post, and an old favorite turns up in here as the presumptive favorite, number 7, Starship Jubilee, JK, only a few lengths from being 5 on the bounce for her. What do you think about the Hillsborough?
I liked Magic Star. I thought maybe she could turn the tables. I mean, we obviously fell in love with her this summer at Saratoga with one of the most visually impressive wins when Irad had that terrible trip, and just she exploded late. I remember we were watching it. We were like in the paddock bar to the side of those TVs, watching it in our little TV spot inside the paddock bar. So I think she's going to turn the tables here. I think that she got handled pretty easily by Starship Jubilee, but she had a little bit of trouble. She was stuck inside. And I think, you know, with this inside draw right here, I think that Johnny, I know this sounds weird, I think Johnny, when he rides for Chad, he really tries to hone in, just because I know that some some people were saying that, you know, Johnny doesn't really ride the turf that well, but don't tell Sister Charlie that. So I think he kind of plugs in a little bit when he rides the turf for Chad.
I think he rides everything pretty well, honestly. I mean, it's a little flaky of an angle only because I can't imagine the graded stakes ride that he's not plugged in for. But it is an interesting jockey-trainer combination, and we've talked about some of the stuff going on with John Velasquez. Who knows? Maybe Chad Brown... maybe being big in that barn even more important than ever for him. It's interesting. It's an interesting little narrative that we can follow along with. And I mean, I do think those two both look really, really strong in here. Is it a two horse race, or do you have anything flaky to throw in here?
Yeah, those are the only two I was really kind of leaning on. I mean, obviously it's turf racing, so there's a lot of them the in the middle of those odd spectrum that they can get the job done. But those are the two that I felt like if Magic Star couldn't turn the tables, it felt like Stuart Starship Jubilee was going to win. But if Magic Star could, I thought there was an opportunity at a little bit of a price for her to run better.
Did you have any excuses for Beautiful Lover coming out of the last? We noted the interesting jockey trainer combination that ended up being a winning one last week with was it Paco Lopez and Jonathan Shepherd? Here, Paco showing up for Chad Brown on Beautiful Lover, a horse who you could maybe use that trying to come from off the pace in blue coated fractions to excuse the last race or to not excuse it. It was a good race, but to say maybe there's an opportunity to run a little better.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could forgive for that. You could also forgive for the 202-day layoff. So, and we're talking about the jockey-trainer combination. I was looking at Timeform US. In the past year, Paco has ridden for Chad 9 times, and he's won 5 of those.
All at Monmouth, presumably?
It doesn't say on here. I'm assuming so. Maybe a couple in Florida. But, yeah, I think I would guess that most of those are Monmouth ship downs.
Yeah, that is interesting though. That yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see that combination at Monmouth. The notable thing about it to me was that it was at Tampa Bay. And as long as we're talking about Chad Browns, would Altea be one that you'd want to use as well on the outside for Julian Leperoux?
No, she just doesn't seem like she's good enough for me. She just feels like she's a cut below a stakes filly. She seems like just kind of an allowance filly that always gives you a little bit of run, but never can really get the job done. So she'll just have to beat me here.
On the Stronach 5 show this week, we talked about the mistake of using horses that you just didn't want to have beat you. I will say this, at this point, it all comes down to cost. But if I can afford to sneak a Chad Brown turf runner in there as a B or a C, and it's not going to cost me too much money, if I can get cheap insurance against the frustration of having to be beaten by Chad Brown on the turf, that may be an exception for me where I will include a horse like this more or less out of fear. Don't judge me, JK.
Well, I'm not judging you. I mean, I think, you know, just by the comment at the end there that I just look at it the other way. Like, I think any opportunity you can toss a Chad, you can toss a Bob, you know, when you can do that, you can toss a Brad Cox or whatever at Oaklawn, you're really giving yourself an opportunity to kind of build some equity within your ticket. So I get what you're saying. You got to take care of your brain. And if you need the emotional insurance, you got to go ahead and grab the policy.
You say emotional insurance. I say that in some cases with Chad Brown getting beaten in turf races, suicide insurance. Let's talk about the Florida Oaks, a grade 3, which goes as race number 10. We've got 3-year-olds going a mile and a 16th on the turf. How did you see this one?
Well, I thought that walk in, what is that, Marrakesh?
You got it.
Yeah, it was 9-2 when she came over here to run in the Natalma and ran well enough and just got beat a nose. You know, obviously spent the rest of her time here. She's been pointing for this race. She's getting Lasix for the first time. I think she's the horse that you want in this spot. There's other horses in here that you could try to get creative with, but nothing that really jumps out that gives me the confidence. I'd rather just single on this thing and hope that she's a real runner and that she runs the race that she ran as a 2-year-old, which is that natural progression into 3. She's going to be really tough in this spot.
Hey, we got a hunch play for folks who listen to our Naira show, the song that kicks that off, Back in the New York Groove by Ace Frehley. We've got New York Groove, the equine, in here. It's all synth form, but it doesn't look too bad. A lot of ones there at the end of the PPs. Do you give her any count?
No, she got a 98 time form in the U.S. as a 2-year-old going 7, 95 going 6.5. So if she can progress a little bit, you would like to think that she could get over 100 in this race. And if she gets over 100, Joaquin Marrakesh doesn't make that jump forward. New York Groove with that nice inside draw should save ground on both turns. She could be tough as well.
JK, I'm having a brain freeze. Who is Verrazano by again?
More Than Ready.
Oh, okay. Because I was looking and I'm seeing Verrazano and I'm seeing Pulpit on the bottom, and I'm wondering if there's turf breeding there. But I don't know how the Verrazanos have been doing thus far on turf. That's obviously something that couldn't be looked up, and I apologize for not doing so before the show. But with the More Than Ready bloodline in there, the turf should be just fine. My fear with New York Groove is that all the wins just depress the price on one for whom there is a surface question to answer. But this race, while it looks open on paper, your inclination seems to be to drill down and try to get out with a single A and then maybe using a couple of backups. Am I intuiting that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would like to do, depending on just how the rest of the ticket constructor lays out, I would probably... That's a ticket constructor. Ticket construction lays out.
I could have edited, but I'm just going to leave it in.
No, it's good. I would probably single Joaquin Marrakesh as a single A and then use New York Groove as a B. But also, if the ticket was thin enough where I could, it didn't crush me too much, I could move New York Groove to an A and just go double A there and not use any backups.
Okay, let's see how we are going to get paid in this all-stakes pick five sequence, which closes out with the Tampa Bay Derby, grade two, Chancet, who we were talking earlier in the week, deciding whether or not Connections were regretting the choice to scratch out of the Fountain of Youth to run here, does get a nice draw in that four pole for Paco Lopez and Safi Joseph Jr. I'm not seeing a reason to get off of Chancet in this spot. Loved Sole Volante last time, but feel like Sole Volante got the absolute running of the race. Chancet, for all the reasons we talked about last week, including this blistering work tab, seems to be sitting on a very big race. How are we going to get paid, though?
Yeah, this is a tricky one. I mean, I was kind of interested in Spa City, but I'm worried that Spa City is going to kind of get buried down on the rail and have to kind of get hooked up with some other horses. Spa City might not get the job done here, but he's one that I'd keep an eye on moving forward. I was impressed with Market Analysis on Pegasus Day when this horse won. And I thought that he's got a right to improve. It's Todd on the Derby trail. What more do you need to know? He's drawn outside of Chancet. Market Analysis is going to be my pick in here. But don't get me wrong. I think Chancet's the most likely winner. I was going to pick Chancet last week. I think Chancet would have won last week. I think he would have followed Flo right through there and pounced on him when he was ready. But Market Analysis for me on the improve and first time going two turns.
Todd Pletcher, John Velasquez, no strangers to these type of spots, that's for sure. And Market Analysis, the race came back quick. The pace was quick. But it's not one of these where I'd say Market Analysis was flattered by the pace being fast early. He moved into the teeth of that pace, more or less, and I can see the case. It's a lot to ask so soon, but I just think we're going to see more and more of this. Even in this round, this sort of second round of Derby prep, seeing a horse with only one start. I mean, look what we're going to see with some of these other horses at the top of the futures market out west with the Baffert runners. Sounds like you think Market Analysis is a very serious player, not just here, but in this division potentially. I mean, how good do you think this one can be?
I do. I mean, I think he can be really good. I think that the winner of this race is going to make a big statement. This race has a lot of pretty good horses in it. You know, Sol Volante, Unrighteous, ran really well when he broke his maiden going a mile and an eighth. You know, there's a bunch of them in here. Chancet, Relentless Dancer is not terrible. Spa City, Texas Swing. There's a lot of horses in here. I think that whoever can pull it off is going to be moved up pretty high on my list that doesn't exist.
Not keeping an actual Derby list, but in your theoretical Derby list. For wagering purposes, are you against Sole Volante here?
I am. I thought that Sole Volante got a pretty good setup last time with the speed duel up front. He came running late with a good setup. So those are the types of horses you try to beat on a Derby trail.
If somebody liked Sole Volante again, I wouldn't talk them off too badly because I do think there could be a fast pace once again in this spot and could get the good setup again. I just think from a value point of view, I'm more drawn to, I'm more inclined to think that Chancet might be value than Sole Vellante. Of course, it's so tough to know before we see all the odds. I wouldn't mind having in some sort of a backup role, though, just on how big the last race was. Do you have a closing thought, JK, on this race or anything else going on this weekend?
No, just check us out on Fox. It's always nice to get those ratings and those viewers. So if you can check us out, we'll be on at 5:30 to 7 Eastern on FS2, and you can also watch it on Naira Bets. The Naira Bets there's a little button you can click on to watch it there as well.
There's great stuff happening in New York. I don't want people saying, wait, why are they talking about the Gotham? What about the Tom Fool? We're going to do it all, or I'm going to do it with Matt Vagvolgi on the Naira show. That'll be up tomorrow. I will give you a chance, though, since there are also a bunch of stakes races there. Do you have anything you're prepared to give out for the Naira card yet, or do you need to do some more digging and people can watch the Fox show?
A little bit more digging, but I will tell you this. I'm always rooting for Eric Guillo because I just want to see him in the winner's circle with shorts on.
Do you think he'll go to the aqueduct 40-degree weather with shorts on? Is that what you're predicting here?
It's funny enough, I saw he posted something on Twitter of him, like, I guess he's lost some weight, so he like posted some picture of him shopping or something for new clothes.
He has a plant-based diet, apparently. Very, very, very impressive stuff. Never easy to drop those LBs. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the show. Quick programming note, we've got our Tampa takeover tomorrow. You don't want to miss that. Matt Vagvolgi trying to hit the pick five at Naira for the fourth week in a row. You don't want to miss that. And there's lots of good stuff up there now. If you haven't been paying attention to what Matt Bernier's been doing, you're missing out. His revamp show is great. More energy than ever, more exciting format, lots of interaction, the good conversation going on in the comments of the YouTube page. If you want to find Matt on there, you should certainly be subscribing to his feed and rating it as well. We appreciate that. He's doing great work. Been so much fun to have him be part of the team. I don't know if he's got TV going on this weekend. We need to start coordinating all this stuff and tweeting about it on the main In the Money media feed, which also is something else you could do us a favor and go over to Twitter and follow In the Money Media. That's what the handle is, right?
Yep. In the Money Media on Instagram and on Twitter.
I'm glad you got that Instagram plug in there. I was going to forget to do that. No boomer jokes, please. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Croteny. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.